I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Let's go to Gary in Bountiful, who's been waiting very patiently. Good morning, Gary. How can we help you this morning?
I have an older apple tree and also a peach tree, and I need to prune them, and I don't know when. Or what's the best way? On the apple tree, the shoots are going straight up, and I try and prune those down so I don't have to try and harvest up so high. Down to the branch, or how do you prune?
Well, on both of those, you can get on them soon. And, you know, I'm not really going to be able to explain every cut over the air, but generally on the apple tree, you would take most of those what are called water sprouts out, and you can leave a few of them in strategic places to keep renewing your fruit wood for, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road. So those can come out. And then is the apple tree trimmed into an open center system or a central leader, or what form has it been trimmed
it's
into?
It's pretty open in the center. It's pretty open in the center.
Okay. So that's probably one of the reasons it's getting so many water sprouts, and there's nothing you can do about it now. But the reason it's recommended that apples are pruned into what's called a modified central leader or a central leader system is that you get far fewer water sprouts with those pruning systems. But what you've got is what you've got. And so take most of them out, and then otherwise on your fruiting wood, you don't want to take more than 15 or 20% of that fruiting wood out. You're going to start with dead and diseased branches and crossing branches, and then just go from there.
Okay. Second question. I have in the apples, it seems like every year I get some kind of a insect inside the typically in the bottom of the apple, goes up into the core. I've sprayed, but I must not be spraying either the right stuff or more as frequently as I should.
How often are you spraying?
Every couple of weeks.
So it's probably codling moth, and their larvae, which we call worms, they're really baby moths, will get into the apple and do that sort of damage. So are you thinning your apples?
Yes. I haven't in the past, but I did last year. But I didn't get very many apples either.
Okay. So if you want to thin the apples after danger of frost has gone, they're about the size of a dime, and you'll have one apple per cluster, and they're spaced about every 6 inches to maybe foot on the tree. And if you do that, it makes it easier to spray them. The other thing I'd recommend you do is subscribe to the USU Pest Lab fruit updates, and I'll see if I can get that posted over the break. And what they'll do is actually tell you almost down to the day that you need to spray. There's several products out there, but generally, if you don't have that, the first application of your spray goes on about 10 days after the blossoms drop. But that USU, those USU Pest Lab updates will get you very close. It lists things you can spray, both organic and conventional, and give you some options there. So,
super. And so I don't do any spraying until the blossoms drop, and then what, every week or two after that?
No, the updates will tell you. And Okay. Normally you would go every 7 to 10 days according to label, and you'd have to rotate your products. But you can cut your spraying down by a third to half if you follow the Pest Lab updates.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Gary. And you're going to post that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, Ton?
I am.
Okay. Next texter is asking, Ton, they need to take out grass and put in a gravel in their park strip. But they have 2 Kwanzaa cherry trees in the strip, so they want to know what they should use to kill the grass that won't harm those trees.
Roundup would be fine. What they would want to do is get some cardboard and wrap the trunks a couple feet up, at least maybe 3 feet. And that way they can go in and spray and none of the drift will get onto the trunks. It's supposed to be safe for the trees, but there's surfactants and other things in the actual Roundup that will sometimes penetrate into thin bark. And just to prevent that damage, as long as they wrap those trunks up with some cardboard, spray it out with Roundup, give it about 10 days to 2 weeks, and then they should be able to go.
All right. The next person is desperate. They have 4 dogs, and they pretty much destroyed their lawn. Is it a pH problem? They're wondering what they can do and if they can even have a lawn.
Well, there's a couple of things. There's maybe not enough yard, and so there's, you know, those problems. The other one can be training the dogs to go to the bathroom in a certain spot, making a gravel area and just training them to go there. And then if they're wearing paths through the lawn, they need to somehow divert the dogs away from running along a fence back and forth all day long, trying to get people to pet them or chasing or whatever. And so there's lots of people that have lawns with dogs, but if you've got 4 or 5 big dogs out on a little piece of lawn that's just a couple thousand square feet, they are going to tear it up over time.
The lawn does come back. I know this time of year is the worst because the snow melts and you just see the destruction.
Yes.
But the lawn will come back on its own if they aren't continuing to do their thing.
Yes. And so, and it just could be that if the dogs are pinned in a smaller area of the yard, they may need to just redo it so that there's either a place for them to lay down that's soft, but otherwise it's gravel or, you know, bark or whatever. But if the yard's not knowing more about the situation, it makes it a little more difficult to make a specific recommendation. But those are generally the bathroom spots and the trails they wear when they're pacing back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the two most common things.
All right. A next person says their lawn is mostly bent grass. They aerated it, but it's so thick that the aerator was pretty tough. The person who aerated it said that they mainly had dead grass coming out, and they're wondering if they should thatch it or how would they get rid of this bent grass?
Well, if I would really like to know more information, mm-hmm. and know who identified it as bent grass, because that would be super uncommon. Bent grass is what we use for putting greens, mm-hmm. and left to its own devices, it can take over a lawn, and it does have a lot of thatch in it, and it's quite an unusable turf grass, otherwise unless you're using it for putting greens.
Right.
And so it could be Bermuda. There could be a lot of different things, but the only way to get rid of it and would be to spray it out with Roundup, give it a couple of weeks and start over. And if it is bent grass, once the new lawn is established, they would want to use pre-emergent after about a year to try to keep that bent grass seed from re-germinating.
All right. Next listener says they live in Manila. They are looking to thicken up their grass. They're only able to water once every couple of weeks, apparently. They want to know what type of grass seed would you recommend, and should they use an early season fertilizer?
Well, with only being able to water every couple of weeks, they're limited if they want a green lawn to something along the lines of it's like buffalo grass. And that would actually form a good lawn, but Manila is in a very cold part of the state in Daggett County, and the buffalo grass may only be green from early to mid-June through early September. So they also may be able to get away with something along like a turf type tall fescue, and that's the one I would veer toward because it'll stay green longer. Mm-hmm. And if their temperatures are a bit cooler because of the higher elevation, it may go a week to 10 days to maybe even 2 weeks without needing water. And it may brown out a little bit in July and August, but it would re-green toward, you know, later on through late August and September. So either buffalo grass, which I don't know that I would recommend that particular, like I said, only be green for maybe 3 months, mm-hmm. but the turf type tall fescue would still look like bluegrass, but would go a longer duration of time without requiring irrigation.
The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Back after a quick break.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Our next listener, Ton, is trying to save her grandmother's snowball bush. They don't want to cut this down due to the heritage, but it's now more than 40 years old, and they've tried the renewal pruning. It's about 7 feet tall, very thin, and the leaves and the blossoms are on the ends of those tall branches. Is it past its prime and needs to be replaced, or is there a way that can start a new bush from the live branches?
Well, there's some things to consider. If they've tried renewal pruning mm-hmm. and fertilizing it, and it's still struggling with age, it could have some root diseases that aren't killing it, but are really slowing it down. And so, you know, there's some things they might be able to do. They could maybe try starting some cuttings from healthy branches that aren't suffering, if there's still any in there. But the other thing, you know, this particular shrub has been, you know, the family, you know, it reminds them of grandma, and it's precious to them that way. But the snowball bushes at the garden center right now are genetically the exact same shrub because they're clones of each other. And so instead of trying to start a cutting from it, I know that there's that sentimental value. If they need to plant a new one, if they went and bought a snowball bush from any garden center, it's genetically the same and they could still enjoy the same bush. It's just not the particular one that grandma started.
Right. The next person, and this is a big question, they're talking about how that severe windstorm took down so many trees in their neighborhood and pretty much deforested it. And they want to know if you have any suggestions for urban forestation.
Replant.
It's a big question because, like, yeah, what does that mean? What types of trees?
Well, and it's almost like a program's worth just to get started on it. But some general suggestions would be to do your research and not plant those trees that blew down. We lost a lot of cottonwoods, some maples. You know, a lot of times these trees were blown over because of, you know, maybe, and I'm not everyone, and I'm not blaming anything on anybody, but maybe if they were pruned incorrectly, there were a lot of different factors that played in. Mm-hmm. But I would probably focus on oak trees because they're deeply rooted, especially American white oak, bur oak, swamp white oak, any of that white oak family usually are very strong trees. There are some maples like what's called sycamore maple, and I'm not talking just sycamore, but sycamore maple for a taller tree that seems to be pretty good. And then on the smaller trees, a lot of newer crab apples don't drop any fruit, or there's more varieties come out that are just fruitless. Merrill Lee and Spring Snow are two of them. But the crab apples would be good to focus on, and just staying away from trees. The faster it grows, the more likely it is to blow over.
All right. Let's take a call from Dan in Orem. Good morning, Dan. How can we help you this morning?
Thank you. Last summer, in trying to improve my garden, I purchased a grow box mix from a local nursery. I mean, they mixed it on site. I was really disappointed in the results, and it seemed really hard. It wasn't light and fluffy. So during the winter, I bought some general-purpose fertilizer, and then I removed a very large tree from the yard, and the stump grinder left just tons of small wood chips and sawdust. So I'm thinking of maybe improving the soil by spreading those smaller wood chips and sawdust on my garden, rototilling it in, and wondering if I need some certain kind of fertilizer or whatever to break down those wood chips and make sure I get a garden this year.
Well, it would have been better to do this last fall if you could have, so that that wood had all winter long to break down. And so this year, if you're planning on growing a garden, I wouldn't do more than about a half of an inch of material. And even then, I would spread some fertilizer. And it just cheap nitrogen fertilizer is fine. But I wouldn't do more than that, because if you put down a couple inches and then rototilled it in, even with fertilizer, you would have a strong chance of soil microorganisms robbing the soil of a lot of nitrogen, trying to break that wood material down. And the microorganisms can outcompete your vegetables for that nitrogen.
Okay. The general purpose fertilizer that I purchased, is that appropriate, or do I get something that is specifically high in nitrogen?
It's probably fine. I mean, it's probably like a 16, 16, 8 or 16 or something along those lines. The first number in the analysis is the nitrogen. And when you jump from like a 16% to a 20%, there's not much of a difference. Now, if you were to use something like urea, which is 46% nitrogen, you need to be careful with that, because you can temporarily make your soil way salty. And so I usually recommend people stay with like a 20, anywhere from a 15 to a 25% nitrogen, just so that they don't accidentally overdo it.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan, for your call this morning. Tom, we have about a minute and a half to the top of the hour break. Let's take a call from Pete in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Pete.
Happy Saturday. Woohoo! Hey, quick question. How do I keep cats out of the garden from digging it up, digging up my bulbs?
Can't dig through trellising. So if you can get some cheap trellising from a hardware store or Home Depot, just like the lattice, you can put that in your rows. They don't like to dig through any sort of netting, anything that catches their paws as they're trying to dig. If you needed to go to something else, there are some of the farm stores sell electric fencing for smaller animals that could be a temporary fix. There's sometimes the hot pepper sprays will help temporarily, because they don't like to get that on their paws. And as they clean themselves, it gives them kind of a spicy mouth temporarily. But usually if you can prevent them from digging temporarily, that will keep them out.
All right, Pete, thank you so much for your call this morning. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Coming out of the top of the hour news, we're going to talk about how to best prepare your garden and your flower bed soil for success. So we hope you will stay with us for more on the KSL Greenhouse. A reminder, our plant of the week was Carol Mackey Daphne. You can find a fact sheet on that beautiful Daphne at the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page as well. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more of your calls.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.